This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
I'm Dave Kattenberg, and this is 12 Canadians Building a Better World from the Inside Out.
Hey Dave.
Hi, how are you?
Hey
Diana. Hi.
How are you?
This pretty amazing Facebook message for my birthday. He was like,
he's so
cute and texts as one of my best friends in Tanzania. This guy right here.
All right. So I'm introducing my friend Dinah Seplis from the Minnedosa area in Manitoba. There's so much to say. I think we met Dinah, our family did, when she was a horticulturalist up in northern Manitoba, working with Aboriginal communities, and re-met her around the Brandon area where she was creating courses at the local community college. She's also a master gardener, and together, but her carrying the ball way more than me, have been connected to development projects in northwestern Tanzania. Dinah talks about herself as being retired now, which probably means she gets paid a whole lot less for all the things that she does.
Thanks, Zach. And Zach Gross is a longtime activist. Zach is like a Renaissance man. In the sense that he's an academic teaching courses. He writes for various publications on a regular basis. He meets his deadlines. He's involved locally in the Gimli community in helping develop it as a fair trade community. He's been active in working with youth locally. He was one of the founders of a hugely popular organization called the Marquis Project, and was the director there for many years, saw it through tough times and through good times, and I really respect Zach.
Development is a major theme in both of your lives and work. What is development?
Well, there's a question. I think in many ways we say that it's people attaining that which makes them the best off that they can be, makes them be the people they want to be. Whether that's technologically, whether that's in terms of their rights, whether that's in terms of having a job, having dignity. I mean, there are lots of definitions of development that people would give you, a technological one or whatever, but I think ultimately it's getting to where you want to go.
That's interesting. In Swahili, the term for development is maendeleo, and you'll be walking down the road with colleagues and you'll see some change. Change has occurred. And without putting a value on it, whether it's negative or positive change, people will say, that's maendeleo, that's development. Mm-hmm. You know, that's progress in a way. So I think the thing is, how do we guide or steer towards the kind of development that I think is good. So there's a value judgment there on what's good development, what's less than good development. But to me, it's about it's change. It's an evolution from what was to something different.
The point about development and change is really seems to be a trend these days that I know that some of the work I've been doing at the university level, which is really a small thing, but I know that the departments looking at things like the current issues in the world, looking at international development, looking at world politics, are really using words like development and change interchangeably. And partly because change happens all the time, whether you try to do anything about it or not. So as Dinah says, in a way, it's a case of, can we guide that change towards something that benefits people? Partly that change creates conflict, political conflict, but also violent conflict. And the world certainly has too much of that right now. Is there a way of bringing about the change that's needed in a way that doesn't impact so negatively on civilians, on populations? So there's, it seems like in the work that particularly Dinah's been involved in Tanzania, and that's really a connection there between sort of Manitoba and Tanzania that's grown over a generation and become richer, that change has taken place, but it seems that it's been done almost entirely peacefully.
The key aspects of the relationship between Manitoba and Tanzania that I've had the good fortune to be a part of have been long-term relationships that have developed because of a multitude of Manitoba organizations that have become interested in the people in a particular region of Tanzania, which is in the lake zone of Tanzania, south of Mwanza. And, you know, there have been, community college people involved, there have been church and faith, other, you know, faith-based organizations that have connected with Tanzanians who've come to Canada as part of educational projects. There have been Manitoba youth who have been interns in Tanzania. There have been 4-H youth who've studied entrepreneurship and visited Tanzania. And through organizations like the Marquis Project, where through public engagement, people, especially in southwestern Manitoba, have deepened their understanding of the context of rural people in the lake zone of Tanzania. And within Tanzania, agricultural training college has been involved, and then a non-governmental organization, the Tanzania Society of Agricultural Education and Extension, has been deeply connected. And
Friendships have been formed.
Friendships have been formed, since 2000, since I received the first email from Tanzania, people are communicating by email. The most recent interns are on communicating with their friends in Tanzania through Facebook. Technology has supported those friendships and relationships to deepen, and the focus has been on rural community development in Tanzania. But I think the southwestern Manitoba community has also deepened its understanding of the parallels in some way about, how to keep youth in a rural setting, how to support entrepreneurship. Certainly those have been some of the goals that we've had, I think, in southwestern Manitoba is to make those linkages and draw those parallels in even further.
I just remember in the early days of the Marquis Project that the very first response we got from a lot of rural people was that sort of practical concern, like, because that's what they have. Some of them also probably had skills they could offer, but the big thing was, well, I have a workshop with like five wrenches in it and I can give you two, and I have eight hammers and I can give you three. You know, that it's that stuff that, because they can also relate to the fact that a lot of the work that needs to be done overseas in their minds is physical work, and you need technology to do that. But I mean, the flip side of that is the belief that all we need is to kind of modernize those people over there and the problems will go away, that it's kind of a technological fix. So on the one hand, you want to accept their donation of tools because they would be useful, but on the other hand, you don't want them to think that that's all that's needed.
Well, or you know, they, you know, at Christmas, there's the, you know, support family by buying a goat, or mm-hmm. you know, that type of thing. I mean, that I see that as kind of a growing interest of people, and because people often tell me, oh, you know, I supported such and such an organization, and you know, instead of, you know, giving everybody a, you know, whatever, a new pair of socks, we bought into the organizations that provide tangible things overseas. But then it's, I find people too want, they expect a lot after they've donated. You know, at the, you know, that once a year, or you know, a couple times a year, they want a lot of follow up on, you know, what's the goat doing, how many, you know, kids has it produced, you know, and mm-hmm. You know, it's onerous, I think, on organizations to, I don't know how they, you know, but I mean, there's an awareness that people have reached that, you know, we can certainly share what we have monetarily, mm-hmm. but
I think your story of Tanzania is so effective because of that, what they say is kind of a longitudinal evaluation, that you can say this is what's happened in the last 20 years, and you can actually say that lives have been changed in kind of a sustainable way, that people who didn't have vehicles before have vehicles now, people who lived kind of on the edge then maybe have some sustainable livelihood now, that people who didn't have an education before now, you know, they have some education, and you know, the possibilities for their children are much better. Like, to be able to actually say that mm-hmm. is, I think, that gets people to want to get on the bandwagon and support that. So it can't, I think you just can't do it on a short-term basis. Like, the goat is a great idea, but if people really think that one goat is really going to do it, mm-hmm. Then that's something we need to be better at saying, that that's just part, it's a piece in the puzzle, mm-hmm. and that there's all these other factors. And some of those factors are the kinds of policies that our country supports, and the kind of lifestyle, unsustainable lifestyle that we lead here, that for Canadians, you'd need, what, four planet Earths mm-hmm. if everybody lived the way we do. Like, somehow we have to get those messages across, that it's not just the people over there that need to change.
What set you on this path? You talked about change, yeah. Change before. I'm wondering, when did the light turn on for you? Was there a moment when the light turned on for you, Zach?
Probably, as a university student, still wondering why the heck I was here on this planet, wondering where I was going to go, not having any particular plans. And of course, this goes back to the days of things like the war in Vietnam, and and my own background, I think, as being Jewish, and the sort of Holocaust background as well, which doesn't work for everybody, but the light went on that there's work to be done to change the way things were, or they would just continue to be the way they have been, and that there would be more and more victims, and that at some point people need to decide to do that. So I think my heroes in those days were, you know, the Yippies and the sort of protest movements in the States more than anywhere. And not so much I wouldn't think of it as a political change, but more of a cultural change. And for people to kind of look at the world as critically as they possibly can and try to better analyze and understand what's going on around them, and then to do something about it. So I don't think I articulated it all that well to myself at the time.
For me, I always was looking forward to doing something non-traditional. So as a teenager, at the time, non-traditional certainly meant looking at worlds and regions outside of central southern Manitoba. That was part of it for me. I looked at entering the Faculty of Agriculture because, again, in the early 70s, not a lot of women were entering agriculture. 1975 was International Year of Women. For me, it was all connected, interconnected, in the sense that trying to build a better world, whether it was through more opportunities for women, more opportunities for underrepresented groups, as a daughter of refugees, that was all part of it, all interconnected. So there wasn't just one moment, I think, but For me too, it was also I sort of stuck with the daily work routine for over 30 years, and so now I'm at a time in my life where I have the opportunities to spend more time working on with colleagues and working on projects that hopefully have some development change focus as a result. Yeah. We all have a mutual partner in Tanzania, the Tanzania Society of Agricultural Education and Extension. TASAI is the acronym. We've developed a proposal to find funding for TASAI to work with youth ages 15 to 23, and we asked the youth, what do you aspire to? And they said, we need money to go and complete our secondary schooling, or to buy a bicycle to attend school, or to get into business, set up a kiosk, and then using the TASAI's tangible goals approach, they identified their goals, their economic aspirations, and then TASAI worked with each youth to identify an agro or rural focused micro business that they could engage in. So whether it's growing, a quarter of an acre of groundnuts, or making donuts like the mandazi, and tea, and selling that, or growing sunflowers or tomatoes, and then developing, you know, a marketing plan to go with that, and then using the funds that they realize to acquire these tangible assets that they're looking for. So I had the opportunity to meet a number of times with the youth groups that had participated in training. In Swahili, Vijana na Maendeleo, Youth for Development, is the name of their group. The treasurer is 16 years old, and she has 7 years of schooling, and, you know, they're youth leaders within the community, and are very much supported by parents and elected leaders of the villages. So it's been exciting to see. Of course, not everything runs smoothly in terms of the microcredit. Sometimes people can't repay as they wish. So, you know, there are growing pains, but generally it's been moving forward in a very positive way.
What is it about this kind of work, Dinah, that appeals to you? It kind of turns your nut.
It does. It's exciting to see. It's like watching something evolve, something grow, something being nurtured. The excitement, as people gain skills and gain confidence and take their rightful place, you know, within a community, you know, instead of kind of being marginalized or overlooked because, you know, they're female or they're young or they're, you know, they're not this or they're not that, and it's very exciting to see people having a voice and finding that voice. Yeah.
You know, Diana's talking a lot about her development work. She engages in development work at home in rural Manitoba, but I sort of, the focus of Diana's work seems to be in Tanzania. But when I think of you, Zach, I think that the focus of your development work is in Brandon, Manitoba, or in Southwest Manitoba, or in Gimli now. Mm-hmm. You know, you're helping underdeveloped Manitobans achieve their full potential.
That's right. I think of myself as the Quebec term, an animateur, somebody who does community animation around development issues. We all have our kind of ideal of what we think it is we do, and for me it's like this morning I drove into Gimli and I visited about 9 different businesses and dropped off stacks of the new National Fair Trade magazine and chatted with the owners or the managers, and so for me that was like a very fulfilling hour and a half of my time, because I know that these people are interested, but I know that they have other things to worry about, so I'm the guy that needs to keep that particular ball rolling. And that's what gives me a sense of satisfaction, and hopefully we're accomplishing something. I had a wonderful experience a few months ago where I had been trying to arrange to go and speak to the Gimli Municipal Council, and it's not a council I had spoken to about fair trade, because Gimli is a designated fair trade town, meeting a number of national criteria to do so. And this was a newly elected council without any of the old folks that had voted in this idea before. So I went in and I wondered how things were going to go, and I had a presentation ready, and they started off by saying, well, it's great that you're doing these things. We're particularly pleased that you've gotten, students involved, because we'd like to see our students being active in the community. So it wasn't even anything about fair trade or global issues. What they were saying was, you have found a vehicle to get more people in the community involved in the overall discussion of things. And so I'll go with that. That's fine. You know, that's a great starting point.
Are you worried about the future, or are you optimistic about the future? Or maybe you kind of waver back and forth. Are we in trouble?
Yeah, we're in trouble. You know, there was a survey done during the years when everybody was afraid there was going to be a nuclear war. There's a survey done with children in the States about how worried the kids were, because everybody thought that with sort of possibility of nuclear holocaust that it would affect the psyche of children, which it did. And they found that the children who were least stressed about the possibility of nuclear war were the children of parents who were the most involved in anti-war movements and peace movements, that because they said, hey, my parents are working on this. So my answer to your question is, hey, my children are working on this.
And they are.
Mm-hmm. So that for me is kind of gives me hope that if my kids were getting and spending and not really caring, then I would feel like there is. And not just my kids, but also I look at a lot of the youth that I've been involved with over the years and see what they're doing now and see how they think now. And so I look at the school system and some of the good things coming in to curriculums, and I think, yeah, there's a legacy there. So I'm not too stressed, because I see that there are people coming after us that are going to continue to work on these issues.
Very well said, Zach. I guess what I'd like to add is that, you know, a lot of inspiration for me comes from, you know, being with people in villages in Tanzania, or with colleagues in Tanzania, and people will say, you know, thank you to the people of Canada for thinking about us. You know, your children, you know, visiting Tanzania, you know, DeZoe being there, you being there, you know, several, you know, that's two generations that have visited the same villages. People know Mr. Zach, they know Zoe. That solidarity, you know, helps support our friends and colleagues in Tanzania as well, and you know, as long as we can keep doing that, you know, providing that energy, that emotional support, I think, you know, helps people move forward, you know, in you know, helps the change happen.
Yeah, I just relating to what Dinah's saying, and I remember that old poster from our sort of activist days as university students. I think it was with Che Guevara on it, and it said something about that there's also a need to live in the belly of the beast, and to, you know, so I think in some ways that's true. But I, you know, at the same time, I would hate to get up in front of a Manitoba audience and tell them they're all, you know, belly of the beast dwelling whatever, but zombies or something, because I mean each one of those people is a whole human being that has aspirations, and but there's no question that there is a job to be done here, and we need to do both. We need to do the where we can be part of the action overseas, we definitely need to do that. Where we can also engage the politicians and engage the businesses and engage the citizenry here, we need to do that too, because that will also make a difference.
You've been listening to 12 Canadians, Building a Better World from the Inside Out. Learn more about Zach Rose and Dinah Seplis and their local global development work, and subscribe to our podcasts at greenplanetmonitor.net. Huge thanks to the Social Justice Fund of the Canadian Auto Workers Union for its generous support. Thanks as well to CKUW, University of Winnipeg Radio, and CFUV at the University of Victoria. 12 Canadians is produced by Earth Chronicle Productions, Winnipeg, Canada. I'm Dave Kattenberg. Bye for now.